From another set of the Days of Unleavened Bread. As you recall, our goal really for the Days of Unleavened Bread is to follow Matthew 5 verse 48, which says, "Become ye perfect even as your Father in heaven is perfect." The goal of Unleavened Bread is to become perfect. To get rid of all leaven, which of course pictures sin, to put in the unleavened bread of righteousness and eat all that we possibly can during that time. So, how does it feel to be perfect? Except for Mr. Coons, who had Dunkin' Donuts this morning. You mean you don't feel perfect yet? You don't feel like you've arrived? Did we not just keep 7 days of righteousness, of unleavened bread? Well, I don't feel perfect either. I hope maybe just a little bit closer than I was a week ago. But what I'd like to suggest today is that we consider doing a project. There are 50 days between the Days of Unleavened Bread and the Feast of Pentecost. 43 of them now remain, because we began counting last Sabbath and we'll finish on Sunday, May the 27th. So, is there a project that we can undertake during the next 50 days that will help us stay on the right track? Stay righteous, we might say. Maybe we could call it Project Perfection. Project Perfection. Doesn't that sound like a great thing to be doing? I mean, sometimes Christianity is a nice sounding thing, but it means so many different things to so many different people out there in the world. Maybe it makes a little more sense. Maybe it's a little more personal when we say, you know, I'm involved in Project Perfection. Wow, that sounds pretty impressive. In Project Perfection, we're going to strive to become perfect. And we will start by examining people just like you and me. They may be removed from us a few generations, but they're very much like us. And if we can learn from their experience, we will gain great insight in helping us toward our journey toward perfection. Turn, if you would, to the book of Exodus. Today we'll look at how human nature is expressed in us by looking at Israel. And I think as we do so and analyze their attitudes and actions, we can provide ourselves with a list of actions that we might undertake during Project Perfection in order for us to become perfect as our Father in heaven is perfect. Sometimes we give ourselves a bit too many excuses. And we say, well, you know, nobody's perfect. You know when I say that? Well, I've just sinned. Now, why don't I say, I'm sorry, that was wrong? I tend to justify myself and say, well, you know, nobody's perfect. Give myself a little more slack probably than I ought to have. Well, nobody does it right. We'll not be perfect in this life. All these excuses that we can give ourselves. Well, what about, I blew it again, I didn't do what I should? Well, anyway, if we can look at ancient Israel and see some items that they dealt with, we can search ourselves, isolate these things, and hopefully in Project Perfection, replace those with positives. Things that we can do. Each of our 8 points during the sermon today, and we say 8 points, oh man, haven't we had enough sermons in the last week and a half? I promise they'll be short points. We'll be out early today, that's my goal, not because I can't talk, but we have to process everything that we've had in the last week of sermons and Bible studies. So we don't necessarily need lots more to process. We don't need to go till 12:30, an hour and 15 minutes from now. Maybe noonish is what we'll shoot for. But the point is, 8 points all begin with this phrase. It is my nature to... dot, dot, dot. It is my nature to... dot, dot, dot. You see, if we're going to be perfect, it's important to recognize what our nature is so that we can begin to develop a plan to overcome that. I ask you to turn to the book of Exodus. Chapter 16 is where we'll start. First point, it is my nature to complain. Now you might say, no, not me. I don't complain. Liar, liar, pants on fire. We may not complain as much as someone else we can think of, but it tends to be my nature to complain. Turn to Exodus 16 and verse 1. Here's Israel leaving the area of the Red Sea. They've crossed it. Waters have parted. They walk through. Egypt tries to follow them through. Waters collapse on them. Soldiers of Pharaoh and chariots are killed and drowned and destroyed. And now Israel marches off toward the Promised Land. Verse 1. They just began. They took their journey from Elim. That was their first stop on the trip. All the congregation of the children of Israel came into the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month. So here we are a month out from their first leaving the Red Sea. And they're departing out of Egypt, out of the land of Egypt. Verse 2, of the whole congregation of the children, not one, not two, not a handful. It is my nature to complain. The whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. Now, it may not be every single individual. Maybe when it says the whole of Israel is talking about in general, this was the attitude. So we can probably pretty safely say, in general, it's our nature to complain about things. Sometimes we complain when we don't know what else to say. Maybe you meet a stranger and, you know, there's that little awkward little bit of how do you start conversations, and you say, well, how are you doing? Well, instead of saying, wow, I am so blessed to have the life that I have, we typically say, oh, well, you know, stuck in traffic again, or here we are sitting at the airport, or man, look at this rain. It seems to flow out of us without any effort at all. So here they are a month out from being rescued by these 10 amazing miracles. And what do they say? Whole congregation murmurs against Moses and Aaron. How you doing? I ain't got enough to eat. You know how hot this desert is? You know how painful it is to help carry that woman I have? To put up with that man you've given me? To have those ducks and those cows and those chickens all around us during this trip? I mean, they were complaining about everything and anything. You ever notice, when you just hear people talk, how much of their conversation is complaint? I mean, you can stand in line at the grocery store, and you ever have that kind of knowing look where you don't really feel it's appropriate to say something, but you're the third person in line, and the second person in line turns to you because the first person in line had the audacity to bring something to the counter that didn't have a price tag on it, and they kind of turn to you. We can complain without ever saying a word. How is that possible? Yet it is. It is our nature to complain. Now, you might stick a little card here in Exodus 16 and turn to Numbers chapter 14. Numbers 14. Now, again, we tease about some of these things in regard to complaining. But it really is something that God is not pleased with. I mean, isn't it something else to be that third person line after the first person given the cashier a hassle because now we have to flip the light on, it's blinking, and Mr. Supervisor or Mrs. Supervisor has to come from all the way in the back of the store. Actually, they were probably outside the back of the store having a cigarette. They had to have come through the entire store, come to the register, punch in their key and do this and do that. And all the poor cashier is just standing there frustrated the whole time because you're frustrated, they're frustrated, the person checking out is frustrated, the supervisor had to come up, and now they're mad at the person who's supposed to put the markings on the thing that wasn't put on them, and everybody's upset. Have you ever gone to that person? Say, I really appreciate the job you do. You put up with a lot of hassle, don't you? Wow. Different world all of a sudden. But it's my nature to stand there and roll my eyes with everybody else. Bad thing. Numbers 14 and verse 1. It's hardly a godly example. Numbers 14 verse 1. All the congregation lifted up their voice and cried. It's our nature. If we don't think it's our nature, we're probably kidding ourselves. We more naturally go to complaining than almost anything else. It's just our nature. It's just the way it is. So the report comes back. There's giants in the land. Everybody's weeping and complaining. It says the people wept that night. On and on and on it went. Verse 2. The children of Israel murmured, complained against Moses and against Aaron. The whole congregation said to them, now not every individual, but the vast majority, the general rule, would God that we died in the land of Egypt, or would that we died in this wilderness? Wherefore has he brought us to this land to fall by the sword? It's not enough just to say, wow, it's been a long trip. I can't wait to get in the promised land. You ever notice that when we complain, we tend to dig up the past complaints? Now here they are, months down the road, about to enter the promised land. They've been going for 40 days now. What should they be? They're still talking about the first day when they got thirsty, day 3 into the trip. They're talking about the first month of the trip when they were hungry. Oh yeah, it's always been this way. When we complain, we are adept at adding things to complain about. Yeah, it's raining today. Yeah, it sure is. Not only is it raining, it's probably going to rain tomorrow. Tomorrow I was planning to turn the garden over to get things ready. And you know I was going to paint tomorrow? You know how bad that garage needs paint? Now I'm not going to be able to paint. And we can go on and on. Yeah, and last week when I wanted to paint, it was raining too. No, I didn't. I was going to paint the week before that, but you didn't bring me the coupon for the Home Depot paint, so I couldn't paint then. And well, all of a sudden, we're talking 6 months ago. Yeah, and I would have painted last fall, but then, you know, you had... Yeah, we go on and on. Verse 3, wherefore, why has God brought us into this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children should be a prey? Were not better for us to return to Egypt? And they said to one another, let us make a captain to return to Egypt. Drop down to verse 22. God simply is fed up at this point. Because all those men which have seen my glory and my miracles, which I did in Egypt in the wilderness, and have tempted me now these 10 times, and have not hearkened to my voice, 10 times. There were at least 10 separate times when Israel bellyached and complained. It is our nature to complain. Let's go back to Exodus 16. We could go more, but no need to. Point number 2, it is my nature to blame others. It is my nature to blame others. Now again, we might say, well, that, you know, not me. I take the blame for everything. Something wrong happens, you know, that's my fault. You know, I'm the wrong one. Of course, we've never said that. Exodus chapter 16 and verse 1. Maybe we have on occasion, and maybe some have been through such psychologically traumatic situations that they really do feel it's always their fault. They always take the blame, and maybe that's not appropriate, obviously, but in general, our nature, my nature, is to blame somebody. It's not my fault. It's obviously your fault. Not my, it's somebody else's fault. Back in Exodus 16, whole congregation in verse 2 of children of Israel murmurs against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said to them, would to God that we had died in the wilderness. And now, wait a second, who are they murmuring against? Moses and Aaron in verse 2. You see, it's not our fault. We left Egypt. Let me pause for a second and say, well, stop for a moment. Did you voluntarily leave Egypt? Yes. Were you forced by point of sword to leave Egypt with Moses and Aaron? No. Okay, so you left voluntarily under your own willpower. You walked on your feet out of Egypt, knowing that you were leaving, walking on the road. Did someone force you to do this? Well, no. But somehow, it's not my fault. Well, yeah, God performed 10 miracles, but Moses, and it's always somebody else's fault. Ever been that way? Ever seen a situation where the blame automatically goes to others? Now that ties hand in hand with number three. It is my nature to exaggerate and justify myself. It is my nature to exaggerate and justify myself. That's what they're saying in verse 3. Would to God that we had died by the hand of the Lord in Egypt, when we sat by flesh pots. Did they sit by flesh pots? I mean, they had these mounds of meat that they'd come home to every day. No, they were crying out to God in slavery. Now, may we analyze ourselves. Have I ever exaggerated to justify myself? Maybe. Would to God that we had died. You know, God, I just wish God would have killed us back in Egypt while I was sitting next to my pot of meat. I just wish God would have killed me. Come on. It's not anywhere near the truth. Not even close. You ever exaggerated in conflict with others? You always. Or I'm always the one who. And we fill in the blank. And there's this conflict. We sat by flesh pots. We did eat bread to the full. For you brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. So not only does the exaggeration and justification come in, usually there's an attack that goes with that. I see what you're up to now, Moses. You just brought us out to starve us to death. Now what are they saying here? They're saying, you see, now we get it. You really are an agent of Pharaoh after all. You were in Pharaoh's court, now that I think of it. And instead of just killing us off and having to bury us in Egypt, you probably worked it out with him to drag us out here in the wilderness so we all starve to death. Then they don't even have to bury us. I mean, talk about a ridiculous exaggeration. And a ridiculous claim. And yet, it is our nature to exaggerate. It's in our nature. It's in our nature to justify ourselves. You know, we do things sometimes against others because, well, we think we deserve it. They always do this or that or the other thing, so I can do this. Let's go on to number four. It is my nature to think I know better. It is my nature to think I know better. Better than those over me. Better than those I'm responsible to. Better than those I'm responsible for. Drop down to verse 11. The Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, I've heard the murmuring of the children of Israel. Speak to them, saying, at even you shall eat flesh, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and you shall know that I am the Eternal your God. They complained, they bellyached, they blamed, they justified, they exaggerated. God said, I'll patiently deal with this. You'll have food tonight, and tomorrow morning you'll have bread. Came to pass that even the quails came up, covered the camp, and in the morning the dew lay around about the host. And when the dew lay was gone, behold, on the face of the wilderness there lay a small round thing, as small as the hoarfrost on the ground. And when the children of Israel saw it, they said to one another, it's manna, for they didn't know what it was. And Moses said to them, this is the bread which the Eternal has given you to eat. God performed this tremendous miracle. Very patient, in spite of their complaining, their blaming, their exaggerating, their justifying. The thing, verse 16, this is the thing the Lord has commanded. Gather it every man according to his eating, An omer for every man. According to the number of your persons, take every man for them which are in his tents. In other words, gather enough to feed everybody in your household. Don't get more. Pretty simple instruction. Verse 17, the children of Israel did so and gathered some more, some less, depending on the size of their family. So far, so good. Verse 18, and when they did meet it with an omer, he that gathered much had nothing left over. He that gathered little had no lack. They gathered every man according to his eating. So Moses simply says, let no man leave of it till the morning. Now we know God was going to teach them faith. Every day I'll provide what you need. Someday this may be something that we have to learn. Maybe some of us are going through this kind of experience right now. That we literally have to trust God every day to provide our daily bread. Well, someday we'll probably all have to be in that circumstance. So God was teaching the lesson of faith. Verse 20, it was their nature, it is my nature, to think I know better. Moses said, verse 19, let no man leave any of it till the morning. Notwithstanding, they hearkened not to Moses. Surprise, surprise. I think I know better. One of the most frustrating and saddest things many times that we have to deal with as elders or pastors is to give someone guidance and advice and to see it completely disregarded. And then to go back with them a month or 6 months or a year or 6 years later and have to deal with the results of the original advice that wasn't followed to begin with. And say, had we not started back there to do that and had followed what the scripture says or the advice, then we wouldn't be here, but now we're here and we only got bad choices left. We got a bad choice and a worse choice left now. We had good choices before, but now that we're down the road this far, we only got bad choices. It's because I think I know better. I know better. And I say, I know better. I'm talking about you, I'm talking about me as well. We think we know better. It's simple vanity is what it is. Notwithstanding, verse 20, they hearkened not to Moses, but some of them left it until the morning. What had he just told them the day before? Don't leave it till the morning. Oh, I know better than that. He said, it's gonna rot and stink. Come on, it's perfectly good. I can see that for myself. I don't need to listen to you. They hearkened not to Moses, but some of them left it till morning. It bred worms and stank. And Moses was angry with them. Can you blame him? I'll give you simple advice. God says he'll provide it every day. That means eat what you need, leave the rest. Then the next day, God will provide you need, eat what you need, leave the rest. Simple instruction. I think I know better. So they learned. Well, Moses did know what he was talking about. Verse 21, they gathered it every morning, and every man according to his eating. And when the sun waxed hot, it melted. So that shows it was probably very good for their cholesterol level, too. That's a whole other story. Sad, but true. Notice in verse 22. Came to pass on the sixth day, they gathered twice as much. Two omers for one man. And all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. In other words, we're supposed to rest on the Sabbath. So, God has to create a special miracle every week where he gives on Friday super manna that will last for 2 days. Or he just keeps the rotting and the worms from growing on the seventh day. Verse 23, he said to them, this is that which the Lord has said. Tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the eternal. Bake that which will bake today. Now it's interesting to me that teaching Israel faith and teaching them about the Sabbath were hand-in-hand lessons. I'll give you food every day. Trust me that it'll be there tomorrow. And by the way, rest on the Sabbath as I've commanded you. And that takes faith as well. It teaches faith and then teaches us how to implement that faith by keeping his Sabbath. Bake that which you'll bake today, seethe that which you'll seethe, and that which remains lay up for you until to be kept till the morning. And they laid it up to the morning, as Moses said, and it did not stink, neither was there any worm therein. God created a weekly miracle. And Moses said, eat that today, for today is a Sabbath unto the Eternal. Today you shall not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, there shall be none. Pretty simple instruction. But you see, I know better than Moses. So, verse 27, it came to pass that there went out some of the people on the seventh day for to gather, and they found none. Why? Because I know better than Moses. It's there every day. The weather's exactly the same. He says there's going to be none tomorrow. The guy is nuts. I know better than him. Anytime we have that attitude, I know better than me, it's usually disrespectful. It's usually harmful for us. Verse 28, the Lord said to Moses, how long refuse you to keep my commandments and my laws? See, for that the Lord has given you the Sabbath, therefore he gives you on the sixth day the bread of 2 days. Abide you every man in his place, let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So they had to test it for themselves. We tend to think we always know better. That gets us into an awful lot of troubles. Number 5. It is our nature. It is my nature to quarrel and get angry. It is my nature to quarrel and get angry. Now again, that may not be your particular issue, but in general terms, it probably is. Some of us are the type of personality that we do not quarrel out loud. We quarrel internally. And we go on for weeks or months saying, this is what I should have said. This is what I wanted to say. And we just didn't say it. Is that any different, really, than saying it out loud when it's boiling within us and we just as soon lop the person's ear off like Peter did if we had the chance? Aiming for his head, of course, but notice here in Exodus 17, verse 1. It's our nature to quarrel and get angry. All the congregation of the children of Israel journeyed from the wilderness of Sin after their journeys, according to the commandment of the Eternal. And they pitched in Rephidim. And there was no water for the people to drink. Now you have to think, now was that some expert planning or what? The interesting thing is God was leading them. He deliberately set them up in a place with no water. It wasn't a matter of, you know, Moses is standing there. I think we should have turned right, but I don't know. Is this upside down or not? They didn't get lost. God deliberately stopped the cloud here where there was no water to teach them some things. Verse 2, you ever see life circumstances that seem to come out of the blue? And if at some point we probably recognize, you know, God put us here to teach me something. And sometimes we don't give God very much credit for really directing our lives. God has put us here for some purpose. Verse 2, wherefore the people did chide with Moses. It is not just enough to be quiet. Suffer in silence. They're going to chide Moses, the King James says. They're going to rile him up. They're going to quarrelsome with him. The people did chide with Moses and said, give us water that we may drink. Again, I'm not responsible. Somebody else's fault. Moses said to them, why chide with me? Why do you tempt the Eternal? I mean, they saw the cloud. Did the cloud stop? Yes. Was that Moses is doing? No. So he simply saying, why are you on God's case? But their nature is to quarrel and to get angry. Now, wouldn't it have been better for them to say, you know, the last place that we camped, we had plenty of water. Could we put together a group of volunteers to go back and get water and bring it for everyone? That's something positive. Wow, what a kind gesture. You're willing to march those 3 days back and bring water? That's very nice. But no, it's give us water. Verse 3, the people thirsted there for water. And the people murmured against Moses and said, wherefore is this that you've brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our cattle with thirst? And Moses cried to the Eternal, saying, "What shall I do unto this people? They'll be ready to stone me." You see, our nature is anger. That's why God says to put to death wrath as one of the fruits of the flesh. It's anger. It's just in us. Verse 5, the Eternal said to Moses, "Go on before the people, take you of the elders of Israel, your rod, wherewith you smote the river, take it in your hand and go. Behold, I'll stand before you there on the rock in Horeb, and you shall smite the rock, and there shall come water out of it that the people may drink." And Moses did so in sight of the elders of Israel. And of course, God provided them water. Now, we're well familiar with what the book of James says. We'll take a moment to turn there. You might save a spot here in Exodus 17. We'll be back in a moment. James chapter 4. In verse 1. The reason I want to turn here is because it emphasizes that it's our nature. It's my nature to be angry. Some people thrive on being quarrelsome and angry. It's not God's way. James chapter 4 and verse 1. "From whence or where do wars and fightings come from?" Where do they come from? Other translations render this quarrels and conflicts. Where do quarrels and conflicts come from? "Come they not hence," as King James says, "even from your lusts that war in your members?" You see, quarrelsome, being angry, tends to come generated from lusts or pleasures. We want something. We want to take something. We get a kick out of being quarrelsome with others. We get joy out of arguing with others, trying to get our own way. It's our nature. Where does it come from? It comes from the lusts that are in us. So it's our nature. It's my nature to be quarrelsome and get angry, just as it was to Israel. Let's go on to number 6. Number 6, it is my nature to make promises I won't keep. It is my nature to make promises I won't keep. Again, somebody said, "Well, no, that's not me. That's not me. I always say what I'm going to do, and I always do it." And if you are, I'm very proud of you. But I think that if we analyze ourselves, we can probably come up with a number of things that we've in essence committed to do or promised to do and never really carried out. I'm not saying that we are ultimately just deceptive and we'll say things and knowing we're not going to do them. So maybe better said is it's my nature to make promises I am unable to keep or am too weak to keep. Sometimes maybe that's more accurate. It's our nature. Exodus 19 in verse 1. "In the third month when the children of Israel were gone forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day they came to the wilderness of Sinai, for they departed from Rephidim, were come to the desert of Sinai, had pitched in the wilderness, and there Israel camped before the mount. And Moses went up to God, and the Eternal called to him out of the mountain, saying, 'Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, then you shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine.'" But you'll be special, is the point, verse 6. "You shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel." What a deal. What a great agreement. God says, simply do what I ask you to do. Keep my commandments, and you'll be a unique and special people. Moses, verse 7, came, called for the elders of the people, laid before their faces all these words which the Eternal commanded him. What'd the people say? "All the people answered together and said, 'All that the Eternal has spoken, we will do.'" Moses returned the words of the people to the Lord. Liar, liar, pants on fire. What had they done in the 40 days leading up to this place? 10 times they did just the opposite. Now maybe their intentions were very good at this point. Maybe they really did want to obey God. Maybe they really did have this in their mind that this is an agreement that we can live by. It's a great agreement. We'll do it. If that were the case, how could it be that in a very few days they'd be building a golden calf? How could it be? If they really meant this. Turn with me, if you would, to the book of Jeremiah. We'll keep our place here. We'll be back to Exodus, not this chapter, but back to Exodus in a few minutes. Jeremiah 31. In verse 31, you're probably very familiar with this section of Scripture about the new covenant versus the old covenant. It is my nature to make promises that I may not keep. Why do we do that? Well, sometimes we really intend to do it. Other times we just say it because we know it's what the other person wants to hear. Jeremiah 31 and verse 31. Behold, the days come, says the Eternal, that I'll make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. Not according to the covenant I made with their fathers in that day I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt. We just read that covenant. Do what I say, and I'll be a tremendous blessing to you. You'll have all kinds of things. You'll be a peculiar treasure to me. That's what he's talking about right here. In that day when I brought them out of the hand land of Egypt, which my covenant they broke, although I was a husband to them, says the Eternal. I was a husband to them. They agreed, but they weren't about to keep it. Did they really understand? Maybe that's the case. Maybe they didn't understand the covenant. Pretty simple covenant. But it's our nature sometimes to make promises, to make commitments, sometimes to ourselves. I think all of us probably at times, at this time of year, have gone over our Passover list and see some of the same things on there again and again and again that we haven't really paid attention to. We looked at them about the time of the Passover, and then not again. So it's our nature, my nature, to make promises or commitments that I don't really intend to keep. I can kid myself that I will, but we tend not to. Let's go back to Exodus, this time chapter 32. For point number 7, Exodus 32 is in where we'll look for point number 7. It's our nature, it's my nature, to distrust God. It's my nature to distrust God. Isn't it interesting that Christ spoke? And he said, nevertheless, will the Son of Man find faith on the earth when he returns? It's shocking to me that he'd make that statement. And yet, when we really understand ourselves, it's our nature. It's my nature to distrust God. I wish it weren't, but it is. Exodus 32, in verse 1. When the people saw that Moses delayed to come down out of the mount. So what are we talking about? A month? A little more than a month? A month and a third, maybe? After they just said, whatever you say, God will do. Agreed. We'll keep your commandments. You bless us. They said they would. But a month later, Moses delayed to come down out of the mount. The people gathered themselves together to Aaron and said unto him, up, make us gods, which shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what's become of him. Aaron said, break off your golden earrings, which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, your daughters. Bring them unto me. And all the people did so. They broke off those golden earrings, which were in their ears, brought them to Aaron. I thought about that. It must have been some pretty big earrings. to be able to make golden calves out of earrings. I mean, there's a lot of earrings, or they had to be pretty big ones. Verse 4. He received them at their hand and fashioned it with a graving tool after he had made it a golden calf and said, or they said, "These be your gods, O Israel, which brought you up out of the land of Egypt." It's our nature not to trust God, to fret, to worry, to second guess what he's doing, to not trust him. When Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, "Tomorrow is a feast to the Eternal." Now you pause there and say, if this is your high priest, do you hold out really any hope over the next couple generations for the priesthood being all that solid and strong? Could we see the handwriting on the wall as to why some of Aaron's descendants seemed to leave God's truth? I think it's pretty obvious. They didn't have God's Spirit. Verse 6. They rose up early on the morrow. They offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and to drink and rose up to play. They didn't trust God. They didn't trust his servants. So they second-guessed. The people have to have something physical to look at. Now, again, very clear evidence they didn't have God's Spirit. People with God's Spirit don't need physical things to look at. They don't need physical evidence because they trust God. But it's our nature to distrust God. We want to see something physical. So they built this golden calf. Here's your God. These are the gods that brought you out of Egypt. Verse 7. The Eternal said to Moses, "Get you down, for your people, which you brought out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They've turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They've made a molten calf and have worshipped it and sacrificed unto it and said, 'These be your gods, O Israel, which have brought you up out of the land of Egypt.'" And the Eternal said to Moses, "I have seen this people. Behold, it is a stiff-necked people." And that was being very kind, I'm sure. It's our nature, my nature, to distrust God. It takes work, it takes use of God's Spirit to truly trust, to know that he always has our best interest at heart. And whatever circumstances we're dealing with, they're there for a purpose and a reason. God will use them for our benefit, as he promises to do. Last but not least, it is our nature, it's my nature to sin. It is my nature to sin. We'll read one more time Paul's instructions in the book of Romans, or his confession, really, his struggle. It's our nature to sin. Paul states this very clearly in Romans chapter 7. Romans chapter 7. We'll pick it up in verse 14. He says, "For we know that the law is spiritual." People in God's church love God's law. We sing it often, "Oh, how love I thy law." We know the law is spiritual, but I'm carnal, sold under sin. See, Paul realized it's my nature to sin. That comes more naturally than righteousness. It's the easier way. Verse 15. "For that which I do, I know not. For what I would, that I do not. But what I hate, that's what I do. If then I do that which I would not, I consent to the law that it's good. But then," verse 17, "it's no more I that do it, but sin that dwells in me," my human nature. It is our nature to sin, to be selfish, to look out for the self, to disregard others. Verse 18, "For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwells no good thing. For the will is present with me, but how to perform that which is good I find not." Verse 22 says, "I delight in the law of God after the inward man, but I see another law in my members, warring against this law of my mind, bringing it into captivity to the law of sin which is in my members. O wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from this body of death?" It was his nature to sin. It's my nature to sin. Turn over to Isaiah chapter 55. Isaiah 55. We'll We'll read verses 8 and 9. Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9. Isaiah recognized that he was on a completely different plane than God. He's quoting God in essence, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are my ways your ways, says the Eternal." You see, it's our nature to sin. It's my nature to sin. It takes work, it takes God's Spirit, it takes prayer to have our nature turned around. Verse 9, "For as high as the heavens are higher above the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." When we recognize that, we've got some place to start from. So the question is, what can we do? We know it's our nature to complain, to blame, to exaggerate, to justify, to think we know better, to quarrel, get angry, make promises we don't keep, to distrust God, frankly, just to sin. Well, we've got 50 days. We've got 43 days now between unleavened bread and Pentecost. Can we embark on Project Perfection, make some progress against this nature we've just described? Now, you might, as I could, list many other things that it's my nature to fill in the blank that is not a godly approach. Can we write some things down over the next few weeks? Try to make some progress against this nature of ours, this human nature? I would challenge you to do that. 40 days. If there are 8 things here, that maybe is a cycle of 5 8s. Can we focus on these things 5 times between now and the day of Pentecost? So tomorrow when I pray, I want to focus on complaining. And I want to thank God as soon as I start praying. I want to thank Him for the weather. Because you know what? I complain about the weather all the time. Boy, March, 80 degrees. Instead of saying, "Wow, this is such a wonderful blessing." "Yeah, we're going to pay for it in July, I'll tell you." Well, come on, just get out there, get some sun. Maybe that vitamin D will help your brain work better. Sunny now, but boy, we'll probably have a drought this summer. You know? Can we work on complaining on one day? In a cycle of 8 over the next 40 days? Okay, that day, today's my day to focus on complaining. Are there things that we can write down? To compliment? To thank others for? I'm going to thank my boss, that person I can't stand, for something. Because I don't want to be, I can easily complain about the boss. I can easily complain about my instructor, my teacher, my, you know, kids, whatever it might be. My husband, my wife, my family. But I'm going to write down, that morning as I pray, I'm going to write down 5 things that I can compliment someone for that day. So that I get out of the habit of complaining. I start to change that nature. I'm going to pray about that. There's an interesting program out there that, an entire book about complaining. How to stop complaining. And you wear a wristband. And every time you complain, you switch the wristband to the other side. And it's amazing. Some people are like a manufacturing machine. They start to realize, you know, most of my communication is complaining. People must be sick of listening to me. How about if we tend to blame others? Can we take that maybe on Monday or Tuesday and say, are there things that I blame others for? I look at my circumstance in life, and am I a woe is me because it's somebody else's fault? Can I focus on being quarrelsome and angry on one of those days, on a cycle of 8? I mean, 40 divided by 8 is 5. 5 times over the next several weeks, can we focus on that for a day? Well, I think so. Can we maybe that day come up with a list of kind things we're going to say to those who irritate us? I think that's possible. Can we focus on fulfilling our promises 5 times over the next 8 weeks? The cycle of 8, I should say, the next 40 days. Is that possible? I think that's possible. Can we focus on faith, trusting God? One of those days, really pray about that. Ask God as we go through the day to really focus our minds on whether or not we really expressing faith toward Him? Really trust Him under the situations? We're really learning what we need to out of every circumstance, regardless of how pleasant or unpleasant it might be? We know, brethren, the goal of unleavened bread is to become perfect. Become perfect as our Father in heaven is perfect. Can we take in this cycle of eight things we've listed today? And again, you can list others. Maybe by the time you're done, you'll have 10 on your list. And once over the next 10 days, four times during now, between now and Pentecost, you can focus that day on that particular thing. Is that possible? I think that's possible. It's a program. It gives us something to strive for. Otherwise, it's why I need to be good. Okay, I do need to be good. But how specifically? Can one, each time we turn from sin, maybe one of those days of the eight, we'll just focus on sin in general. Can I keep hash marks every time I turn from a sin that day? Can I mark that down? Can I keep a 3x5 in my pocket? Pull it out and say, you know, I didn't yell at my wife. All right. I didn't scream at my children. Yes. All right. I clicked away from that ugly website. Check. All right. Can we do that? That's possible. It's a program. Project Perfection. It is the goal of unleavened bread to become perfect. So, brethren, let's take what we learn from ancient Israel, what they went through, understand the issues and the problems, and do what we can to enact the principle of Project Perfection so that we one day will be like God.